Hello, fit and proper listener. This is just a message from Rhys, the co-host and main and best host of this podcast, to let you know that I have been on tour since January and the spring leg is complete, but I have extended my tour of my stand-up show Spilt Milk into the autumn. We start in August, which I appreciate is summer, at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival for 1 week at the Pleasance, and then I move on from September to go back all around the UK once again in your classics, your Manchesters, your Birminghams, your Sunderlands, your Peterboroughs, and then the smaller places, your Newburys, your Andovers, your Swindons, even going to Ireland, Belfast and Dublin. London dates to be announced. There's all sorts, all on my website, far more than I've said. Northampton, you know, all sorts. So do get on there, reesejames.co.uk, get yourself some tickets. We're sure to have a fit and proper evening. I'll see you there. Welcome to Fit and Proper. I'm Rhys James.
And I'm Lloyd Griffith.
Each week, we delve into the murky world of football club ownership. We're giving control to our famous guests to run their beloved club in their own way.
They can do whatever they like, from changing the manager to moving the stadium close to their house, sacking the mascot to insisting all their players have blue dreadlocks.
But their decisions will be scrutinised heavily, just like a real owner, firstly by Lloyd and I, and then our supercomputer, which will analyse the data and decide if they are a fit and proper person to run a football club. Lloyd, how you doing?
Oui, je suis bon, merci.
Yeah, you going with that, are you?
French.
You've been doing GCSEs again?
I actually didn't do GCSE French, did GCSE German. Do you speak any languages?
Oh yeah, just a bit.
Go on.
Sorry, no further questions, please. We've got Ellis James, probably just what a football fan Ellis James is. Over land and sea. He's probably, in terms of comedians, you're up there, but in terms of comedians, dedicated fans for home and away days all over the world.
Yeah.
This guy, I'm going to mention this to him because I find it very impressive and I don't know how he manages it with children.
Ellis James is, as you say, he's just everything football. He's just everything football. And he lives and breathes it. And his knowledge of football is insane. Obviously, of Welsh football, him being Welsh, is unrivaled.
But big into the past, loves the 50s, loves talking about the 50s. I work with him on the show Fantasy Football League on Sky. And that writer's room is just Andrew Mensah arguing with Ellis about how Mensah just saying, like, if I was around in the 50s, I'd have been the best player in the world. These guys were terrible. And then everyone just have Ellis just showing him sort of like, I suppose it's not even really that clips of players. It's like articles about how players were majestic.
Like,
it's
like paintings.
Read this. Exactly. Just have a look at this tapestry. And you can see, look at the skills. Look at the turn. But yeah, it's very fascinating to see Ellis try and big up sort of the 50s to a young person who has absolutely no interest in it.
I'm almost certain
someone who doesn't even really believe like Ronaldinho was good.
Yeah.
Someone who thinks like, R9 doesn't compare to any of the modern players. Yeah. Someone like that. So the past, going either further back than that, this guy, he's got no chance.
I think most people that listen to this podcast will probably follow Ellis James. If you don't, do give him a follow on Twitter. Because it's just great football content.
Always great football content. He has a sport podcast, Socially Distant Sport Bar.
Yeah.
And he's also got a lot of other podcasts because he's broadcasting royalty. So I'm very excited for this.
It's going to be a good one. I'm just going to pour some oat milk in my coffee and I think let's get on to it.
Let's get on to it. This podcast is brought to you by coffee.
Brewed Health.
Our guest this week on Fit and Proper is a broadcaster, a comedian,
yes,
a Welsh man, yes, a footballer, a five-a-side footballer.
Oh, can I interject here? A bags merchant is what I'd say.
A bags merchant.
Yeah.
I was about to say that, Lloyd, actually, if you'd given me a chance, obviously. And I think, as alluded to in the intro, one of the most dedicated football fans I've ever heard of. Absolutely obsessed over land and sea, really travels to go and watch.
Europe.
And Europe, of course. Yes, that's the sea. That's the sea part of it, Lloyd. Oh, and okay. Land, actually, crucially. Really goes to travel to watch the Welsh national team and his club, Swansea City. It's Ellis James. Welcome to the show.
Oh, what an introduction. Flattery will get you everywhere.
I know that.
I'm so pleased with that. A bagsman. I played in the game that the dads at Rob Beckett's kids' school play in. On a Sunday, even though my child doesn't go to that game, my children don't go to that school, and I'm going to say this is very arrogant, and maybe they might dispute this. Maybe they might disagree. I played badly. I gave the ball away. My defending was sloppy. I scored 6 goals because I refused to not score.
I sort of Dimitar Berbatov style of play.
I refused to not
goal
score.
Goal hanging, the banging them in.
I was giving the ball away. I was actually, I would say I was more of a hindrance at points. But then I scored 6 goals because that is what I do. And my celebration is always the same. I pretend to inject myself with hard drugs and I say, I'm an addict and goals are my fix. And some people find it funny, some people find it tiresome, but I always do it.
Can I just tell the listener as well, Ellis regaled that whole parable with his eyes closed. Like some Methodist preacher healing someone.
I don't think enough celebrations come with a catchphrase, actually. Too many of them are just physical actions, aren't they? Because they know it'd be hard to get the words across to a full stadium.
Yeah.
But at playing at a school, you might as well just...
Yeah, you know, when you've got an audience of zero, you can get your catchphrase out there. Occasionally, Lloyd and I were playing the game, the comedian's game on the Tuesday afternoon, and there were... a game had started about 10 minutes before we ended in the sort of on the pitch next door. And as they were warming up, they were watching us. And they were... I don't know if they did this to you, Lloyd. I got nutmegged by Tim Key. And about 3 of them were going, "You're dead! You're dead! You're dead! Oh my God, you're dead!" And it absolutely destroyed me. And then I realised that if I was a Premier League footballer and people were singing about my wife and my kids and all the kind of stuff that they have to put up with, there's no way I'd be able to handle that. Because crumbled.
You're a confidence man. You're a confidence player, arm around the shoulder, need praise at all times.
Oh, my God, yes. Like you would not believe. But it was embarrassing then.
No, but that was just in the warm-up, though. That was just in the warm-up.
No, no, but they were warming up. We were still playing. It was the last 10 minutes of our game.
Do you know what? I think I do remember. Yeah. Just a load of old dads, weren't it, saying, "You're dead!"
It was the way they kept saying that I was dead.
I got heckled playing five-a-side once. We kept getting heckled. It was at the end of a TV show, a doomed TV program called At 11-ish that we did years ago, a sketch show on ITV2. We then played the end of series and end of show forever, it turned out, five-a-side match. And we were all getting heckled by these kids who just... It's like one of those five-a-side games in the cage. They were just sort of like rattling the cage, just heckling us the whole time. And they, whenever I got the ball, they would say, "One Direction." And then I missed a shot. And this kid went, "One Direction, nowhere." And it was by far funnier than anything that had ever happened on the TV show we just recorded for 9 minutes.
Kids can be so cruel.
That man is Mo Gilligan, and he's now got his own TV show. I say, Ellis and I play football quite a bit on a Tuesday. And I say, Ellis pays me some of the nicest compliments I ever have. And it's got nothing to do with my ability in goal.
What sort of compliments? Oh, let me guess. Calves?
Fucking hell. I mean, it's like they've been carved by God.
Yeah.
They're huge.
They're big boys. They're big old boys, those calves.
I wasn't even saying that. I wasn't going to say that bit.
I cycle a lot, and I would say I've got biggish calves for a man of my size. And yet, Lloyd's calves, I occasionally think we should chop Lloyd's legs off at the knee and just donate them to science. I've never seen anything like it. Jack Grealish, he looks like Mr. Muscle in comparison with Lloyd from the knee down. And also, I think there are two comedians with nice legs. Ivor Graham's got very nice legs in shorts. But Lloyd...
in shorts.
Good grief.
Yeah, oh. they are big. I was going to say, you compliment me. You always say that I smell nice.
Yeah, you make the game smell nice.
Yeah. And it's
funny that that sounds like the sort of flowery language you'd get in like a Jonathan Liu column about sort of like a Brian Hill type player. It's like, sure, he's not that prolific, but he makes the game smell nice. And it's a metaphor. You literally mean Lloyd makes the game you're playing smell nice.
He dribbled past me. And once I'd accepted that Lloyd had gone, I caught up with him and said, "What are you wearing?" It was absolutely fabulous.
And honestly, it was the best compliment I've had for anything during a football match. And this was years ago, but I remember going home and like sending Ellis a message with the link to the perfume I was wearing. Okay. Hello, mate. This is what I was wearing, just in case you want to smell like me.
There's a few interesting things there. One of them being that Lloyd puts on aftershave for a football match.
Oh my God, but I put on a specific aftershave for a football match. Like, and that is a thing that I've had since a kid. I will never wear the same aftershave playing football that I wear. I have specific aftershave for playing football. And that is a thing.
Can you hear yourself at the moment? You sound absolutely insane. You sound insane.
I make the game smell nice.
Yeah,
fair enough. I did a socially distant sports bar gig last night in Islington. And at the end, Mike Bubbins put aftershave on. And he said, "Do you want some? It's nice." And I went, "Yeah, go on then." So I was wearing it. And then he sprayed some on Steph. And then we went up for a drink. We all smelled the same. It's like, it's like a podcast of uniform aftershave.
You made the pub smell nice.
Smell nice.
Podcast sponsor.
But not to kind of blow smoke up your ass. But you're a very good footballer, Ellis, I think.
Oh,
and you actually, what you said earlier about you do always want to score. You have always scored. Like you've never had a bad game. There's always that thing where there's a manager in your head that's going, "What the fuck are you doing? Get out there. Get out there and show what you've got."
I occasionally, you know, when you read interviews with goal scorers and they'll say, "There's nothing like it. It's better than sex." Goal scoring is better than sex. I'm obsessed. I just love seeing the ball at the back of the net, man. It's better than getting laughs. It's better than writing a joke. There's nothing like it. I realised in lockdown, so I had, my son was born in 2019. And because he was quite a bad sleeper initially, I didn't play for about a year. And then I played in the last game we had before the lockdown was announced. And I had a really good time. I thought, "Oh, you idiot, why haven't you been doing this more often? Why haven't you been making the time?" And then I really missed it in lockdown. So I wrote a very hubristic article in The Guardian about how I was going to play as often as possible for the rest of my life. It got published, then I got injured a week later, missed 9 months.
God, yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yeah,
I remember the article. It was a brilliant article. And I remember thinking, because I hadn't played five-a-side for about 6 years at the time, and I remember thinking, I'm going to make a big comeback here. And I think then I played in one game and everyone was like, it was a lockdown worth of just boozing and, you know, sitting around doing nothing. And then I had mates who were in a team and I was just like a ringer. And they were just like being screamed at, "Track back!" every five seconds, and having to say, "That is literally impossible.
Yeah,
I'm done for here."
And they're so fit. After that article came out, I got loads of tweets from people saying, "Hi, Ellis, you don't know me, but we're a man down for a game in Streatham tonight at 9 p.m.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I mean, you literally said, "I want to play as much as possible." That are going.
There's a team called Swansea City Exiles who play in one of the power leagues, and they won the league a couple of years ago. So they play in a Swansea kit, but they've got a star above the badge to signify that they've won the league. And they try to play like the Swans. So it's possession-based football. It's a lot of fast, short passing and keeping hold of the ball, resting in possession, all that kind of stuff. So I've considered turning out for them. They have asked, but I think that they're quite fit and I'm not particularly fit, which would be the worry, because I don't want to let anyone down. That's the thing. Whereas
if you're a goal scorer then, or a bagsman, are you kind of a goal-hanging striker in this role, or are you all over?
I think for years and years, and I don't want anyone to think I'm better than I am, so you must modify your expectations, but for years and years, from the age of about 9, I was on the wing. And a very old-fashioned winger, the kind that doesn't exist anymore.
Dean Saunders.
Like a chalk on your boots, more like a Stanley Matthews.
Oh, right.
Like, so chalk on your boots, hug the touchline. And I just was just getting the ball to the byline, crossing it in. Because I was nippy-ish as a youngster, I suppose. And then I just did that. But that position is so outdated, it doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah.
So in five-a-side, I just try and find whoever the slowest defender is, and then I will attach myself to them So my positioning, I suppose, would be frustrating if we were playing in a proper team, because I don't stick to position. I give myself a license to roam. No one else has given me license to roam. And that is the problem.
And Lloyd, I don't know if you were listening carefully there, but Ellis's tactic to stick to the slowest person on the pitch is probably why he knows what you smell like.
To be fair, as a goalkeeper, I am probably the slowest person on the pitch because I don't, I don't really move.
Moving sideways like a crab.
Do you know what Lloyd does? Lloyd passes the ball with backspin, which is very, very rare.
Lloyd, are you doing that on purpose?
Yeah.
Have you been doing that on purpose?
Yeah, man. I've done a couple of goalkeeping courses. Thanks very much.
I
also throw it out with backspin as well. So if I'm throwing it out, I put a little bit of spin on it. This is why I use roll fingers, not negative cock gloves, because you can get a bit more spin on it. And so that always, when the ball comes to you, you've got less to do because it's done a bit of backspin and it's kind of like it's ready for you.
Oh, I appreciate. I know this, Lloyd. I'm noticing this stuff.
Yeah, I'm playing football today, comedians football today for the first time in about 6 months, and
I'm playing today.
Oh yeah, and also, I think mine and Reese's agent has this. We basically, me and Reese have got the same agent, and I didn't want to tell her that I was playing football, so I put it in my diary as personal, so she didn't see it. Because I have got a deadline, but I was so desperate to play in it, so I put in it in my personal email, which is only really for doctor's appointments and dates. Go to therapy. But today I put in football under my personal card, and I cannot fucking wait.
Nice.
What's great about this episode so far, Ellis, is that the way, for anyone who isn't familiar with your work, which won't be many, but anyone who isn't, it sounds like we're interviewing Darren Anderson. So far, all we've talked about is, well, as a kid, I was more of a winger, and then but I am a goal scorer. It's like, what? It's like Thierry Henry's on the podcast.
I don't want anyone to think that I'm a Premier League footballer from 20 years ago that you haven't heard of. I'm not a very good footballer. I just love playing.
And it's sort of more fun, isn't it? After a while, if you do comedy for long enough, it's sort of boring talking about being a comedian. Yep. It's much more fun talking about my actual passion.
Yeah, just I'm off the last offender's shoulder. That's my real passion.
Anyway, Darren Anderton's column is in The Guardian. It's every Friday. We should talk about the football team you support, because again, would you say you're the most famous Swansea fan? That pause says yes.
Well, there are a lot of far more famous people from the area.
We're not interested in them.
Your Catherine Zeta-Jones is. Your Bonnie Tyler's is.
Your Sheens?
Your Sheens. Your Rob Brydens. I tell you who's a Swans fan who will be more famous than me is Johan Griffey, the actor from Hornblower.
No, I think we're going to stick with you, actually.
Definitely not heard of any of those words before.
He was... He's out in America. There's a great picture of him in a Swansea kit in about 1981. Michael Sheen has an affection to the club, but grew up as a Liverpool fan. Mm. Catherine Zeta-Jones's father goes, I think. Her allegiance is unknown. Bonnie Tyler just supports general things from the city. Ex-Conservative Party leader Michael Howard has been known to... support the Swans. Obviously, he'd be much more famous than I am. I'm trying to think. Rob Brydon's brother is a massive Swans and made a documentary about the Swans, about the John Toshak era. But Rob doesn't particularly like football. But Rob will occasionally sort of do good luck messages for the club and that kind of stuff. But in terms of match day going people, you know, I've never seen Catherine Zeta-Jones at the Swansea.com stadium.
Well, I'm on the website swanseacity.com. I'm not sure if you're aware of this article, Ellis, but it is titled Swansea City's Famous Fans. And the first photo is of someone that I don't recognise, and I think that's just like a headline picture. And then it says, one of Swansea's most famous daughters, Catherine Zeta-Jones, supports her hometown club from afar, along with her husband, Hollywood megastar Michael Douglas. So apparently Michael Douglas also...
I think that, you know, that's
never
propaganda.
Seen Michael Douglas in the East End.
Propaganda on the website there.
However,
I love the idea.
They're trying to get the clicks up with the SEO there. For anyone that happens to be searching for Michael Douglas and Swansea on Google.
The second photo, then it says, Haverford Westbourne comedian and actor Ellis James can regularly be seen with his top off at the Liberty. It doesn't say that. And then afterwards, it says, the Swans were in royal company in February 2015 as Prince Albert of Monaco was a VIP guest.
Prince Rainier of Monaco, who I think is Prince Albert's dad, I think he went to the Vetch.
Really?
Because we played them in the European Cup Winners' Cup. So I think that Prince Rainier of Monaco, and the thing with the Vetch, it wasn't really set up to welcome dignitaries or members of any royal family. You would have had like a tray of sandwiches with the ends curling up, covered in cling film.
Lovely.
Like, I love the Vetch. My friend Andy, who I go to games with all the time, his dad was the match day announcer at the Vetch at the end of the 80s, early 90s. But his dad played football on a Saturday afternoon for Landor Social Club Seconds, so was often late, at which point Andy would do it, even though he was 11 and his voice hadn't broken. Welcome to the Vetchfield Swansea. Our opponents this afternoon, Rochdale, in goal for the Swans. Number one, Roger Freestone.
Which is so good.
What sums up the club at the time is... I asked him once, I said, you must have been a mascot then. He said, 100 times? No one wanted to do it. I was a mascot all the time. Just no one cared. No one was interested.
I would love to be in a stadium where the announcer comes on and not knowing that it's the person's son. And just going, what has happened here? When you're still at the age where you're being mistaken for your mum on the landline.
Yeah, prepubescent boy. And he said all the time. No one was bothered, and they would just be like, "Yeah, well, get Andy to do it. Andy'll do it. It doesn't matter."
Great.
Like, I remember once at the Vetch, they've clamped down on this kind of stuff now. So there were mascots. There were three or four mascots who were young children of mascot age, and a 35-year-old man called Jason from Batalbert who did it because it was his birthday. But they still went round and, you know, "Where are you from?" "Oh, my name's Lee, and I'm from Morriston." Where are you from? My name's Jason Patel, about 35 today. It was just different.
Holding the head of the goalkeeper as he's coming out.
Yeah, all of that. Took a penalty against Cyril the Swan, saved by his wing.
Oh, that is brilliant.
It was just different then, and it was so much less professional. And this speaks volumes about, I think Widdicombe's a bit like this about Plymouth. I did prefer it, and I preferred the old ground, and even though when as a club it's run that way, you can only go so far, and you have to professionalise if you want to have, you know, 7 years in the Premier League like we did. There's something so charming about getting the matchday announcer's son to do it because the matchday announcer is playing himself. That is just
that's the sort of keeping it real level that you want to be at. None of this sort of, like, you know, all these chat about takeovers from various government bodies around the world, various states, and then you go, that's what you want to keep it at.
I was thinking about this because I honestly think in my lifetime or just before, I cannot think of a club in British football who've had more of a roller coaster ride than the Swans. So between 77 and 81, we went from the fourth division to the first division in 4 years. No one has done it faster. In 75, we had to apply for re-election to the Football League, which was this odd system where you were bad enough to be relegated, but then you just asked all of the other chairmen, said, "Can we stay up?" And they'd be like, yeah, that's fine. You can stay in the Football League." It's this weird system no one's ever really been able to explain to me. So we went from the fourth to the first division. We came sixth in that first year, having been top until the end of March. So at one point, it looked like we were going to win it. We basically fell apart over Easter, and then that was that. But we were top from the first day because we won our first game 5-1 against Leeds. So we went 4-3-2-1, 1-2-3-4. So within 8 years, we were back in exactly the same place that we'd started. And then we were wound up in the High Court and saved by a local businessman called Doug Sharp. Then we sort of bounced up and down the divisions. We had terrible owners then in the 90s. We had five managers in the same season in 95-96. We were sold for £1. We were bought for £1. The guy who bought us for £1 then instantly, a man called Tony Petty instantly tried to sell most of our best players and cut the wages of everyone else. At which point there was a sort of Save Our Swans campaign. Someone got into the director's box and hit him. And sort of attacked him and said, fucking get out of our club, you bastard.
Oh, my God.
And then someone took him to court. I think from what I remember, he won that court case. So he remained in control. But then eventually he was persuaded, I think because he was being intimidated around the city and people were trying to brick his car and all this kind of stuff. So there's a consortium of local businessmen and the Swans Trust. That's where the Swans Trust, that's when that was founded. They paid him 20 grand in a Tesco carrier bag, which is just a fantastic detail. 20,000 quid. And he was in a hotel room in Cardiff. And then the season after, I think a couple of seasons after, 02-03, we almost got relegated from the Football League. We had to beat Hull on the last day of the season. So that would have been the end of 2003. Within 8 years, we were in the Premier League.
Mm. Fucking mad.
That so then we were insane. In the Premier League. So we went, you know, from League Two up to the Premier League in 8 years. And then we won the League Cup. We got into Europe. We beat Valencia 3-0. Away out in the Mestallas, Mestella is how you pronounce it. I can remember. You sort of. I remember when I was a sort of late teenager, maybe sort of early 20s, reading an article saying, "Oh, I'd love to establish this as a championship team." I'm thinking, "You're dreaming."
Yeah,
that's insane. Yeah. that's never going to happen. Even though I think that the city's big enough and there's enough supporters for us to be a championship club, as proven over the last, you know, 15 years. At the time, 20 years ago, it was madness because we'd just gone from one bad owner to the next. And like the North Bank was where I used to stand, and that was the sort of where our most vocal supporters would stand. And at one stage, that was a really, really big terrace. Then the back sort of two-thirds of it were condemned by the council because there were just these big holes in the floor. So they just boarded it off with some plywood. And the plywood was sponsored by Monster Munch. So that's the sort of...
This is what we're dealing with.
But so then obviously at one point we were in the Premier League.
When you picture Swansea then, if you've been through all of that basically and you've experienced all of that, basically every division, if you just shut your eyes and just imagine Swansea City Football Club and not hypothetically or anything like that, you're just picturing them, what division are they in that makes sense to you?
The Championship.
Right. Okay. In terms of
our, so the reason I think I am more, I think people of my age specifically are more forgiving of owners and bad managers, etc., is that I'm too young to remember the glory period under John Toshack when we were in the First Division and beating Man United and all that kind of stuff. I'm far too young to remember us when we were a good Second Division team in like the 50s. And I'm slightly too old to not see the Premier League as anything but an aberration. So if you're, say, 15 years younger than I am, you think we're a Premier League team because we were there for 7 years and playing well and managed by Michael Laudrup and all that kind of stuff. I came of age when we were rattling around the bottom divisions and often crowds of sort of 3,000. So, but then again, so are Cardiff and so are Wrexham and so are Newport County. It's just Welsh club football was in the doldrums when I was a teenager in the 90s. So for me, the Championship's actually a bit of a treat because that was the division I always thought we belonged in, but it just seemed like this impossible task to reach it.
I was chatting to Sean Almey, who's a comedy promoter based in, like, lovely bloke, Hull City fan. We were talking about Hull in that season because Grimsby.
Because I always thought they were a big team, Hull. Whenever we would play Hull, I would think that they were a big side.
And being a Grimsby fan, we never really Hull were never really our rivals because as we went shit, they went good. I couldn't remember what year it was, but it was 2002, 2003, where again you were in that relegation scrap.
Oh, we were terrible that season. Bloody hell.
Hull City were a Premier League team in 2008.
It's incredible,
it's just
isn't it?
Absolutely mad that you can go from, and also like that trapdoor for League Two into the Conference is absolutely awful. And back then as well, there is no buying yourself out of it. Do you know what I mean? If you're in there, you're in there. Do you know what I mean?
Well, we would have been the first team to have been relegated from the Football League that had been in the First Division.
Wow.
And I think it was Oxford United in the end. I think it was them. But you know, Wrexham is a great case in point. Wrexham were a Football League club for about 90 years.
Yeah.
You're right from the beginning. And in the 90s, I was always quite jealous of Wrexham because they beat Arsenal and they had a great cup run. They got to the quarter final and they, you know, they played nice football under Brian Flynn. And I always used to think, oh yeah, they're the sort of model. I'm quite jealous of how Wrexham are doing it. And then they get relegated and they just got stuck. And until Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney came in, they wouldn't have been able to get out there because there's always one club, annoyingly, in the sort of National League that does have money and they chuck money at it and then they get into the Football League. And this time, obviously, it's been Wrexham. But for them, who were such an established league side, it was just too hard for them to get out of there because it's not really set up properly. Like Notts County ended up with well over 100 points and didn't go up automatically.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's also that whole, I mean, look, we're not talking about the conference yet on this episode, but it is mad that a team like Woking, who came, I think, fourth, who were like, that just has never happened before. But it just doesn't take any of the headlines because you've got Wrexham, who are Hollywood,
yeah.
Notts County having this unbelievable season, and then Chesterfield, who are just doing brilliantly anyway.
But those two teams were about 30 points better than third place.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the, you know, it was a real two-horse race, the National League this season.
And one of them has the backing of Walt Disney. So, I mean, how could you possibly expect to get any kind of media coverage versus Walt Disney?
Yeah. 2002 to 2003 Football League, the two teams that went down were Shrewsbury and Exeter City. Swansea finished 21st, just above Carlisle.
We played Exeter in the penultimate home game of the season, and we lost 1-0. And at that point, I thought, we're down. This is it. We're down. And I talked to Brian Flynn, who was our manager, and I said, so the week going into the Hull game then, you've been brought in at around Christmas time to save the club, because if we'd gone down into the National League, you know, or the conference, it must have been as it was then, I think the club might have folded. We'd have been in awful trouble. I said, how did you prepare for it? And he said, oh, because by that point we'd been taken over by the sort of consortium of local businessmen and the trust. And I said, I just need a really good training pitch. So they trained at the university because we didn't have a proper training ground. Like I talked to Alan Curtis, who was in the team when we were in the first division. I said, so where were you training? So we did a lot of training on the beach, a lot of runs along the seafront. And in the patch of concrete between the turnstiles and the north bank, we would play there.
Oh, my.
I said, on the concrete? He said, yeah, yeah. I said, but that was covered in like broken glass and stuff. He went, oh, yeah, we'd get cut. He said, because there was a lot of Welsh players in that team. So he was like, we'd get cut. And we'd often play like Wales against England games. They were competitive. I said, on the fucking concrete? He was like, yeah.
Wow, like playing out. Like playing out as a kid.
Exactly. But they
bashing
were
it against a garage.
Professional footballers playing in the first division. That's how they were preparing to play Liverpool.
Playing Kirby.
Yeah, just insane. So yeah, they had a week of training at Swansea University, I think, on their training grounds.
Are you happy with the current ownership, would you say? If you sort of see yourselves in the Championship and that's where you are.
The current ownership, I've got no money to invest and they seem to have completely lost interest. So we've just lost our manager, Russell Martin, who I really thought that we were onto something with him, and he's going to go to Southampton. And we had a really big dodgy section of sort of halfway through the season for about 20 games, but we started well and ended very well. We were 3 points off the playoffs. And I think if we'd backed him in January, only bought a couple of players, and then if we'd have been able to do the same in the summer, I think we'd have had a really good go at the playoffs next season. But now we're managerless. I don't know who we're going to get in. And I think the previous owners who were local, a lot of our fans hate them because they accuse them of having not done sort of due diligence on the new lot. And knowing that the writing was on the wall in terms of the Premier League, our Premier League status, and that this is what they say, and that they needed to sell quickly so that the club didn't halve in value, because that's what happens when you get relegated, you know. So they wanted to sell whilst we were still a Premier League team. But they're just American. It's like an American hedge fund fronted by two people. We're just treading water at the moment. So, no, I think they're certainly very unpopular with the supporters.
Interesting. Well, hang on.
Newyddion Justin Torri, a mae Ellis James bellach yn berchenog newydd Clwb Pêl-droed Dinas Abertawe. Byddwn nhw'n ceisio cael mwy o ffynilion pryd ni'n cael nhw, ond i cadarnhau. Ellis James yw perchenog newydd Clwb Pêl-droed Dinas Abertawe. Owen 20 English speakers, Ellis James now owns Swansea City.
Okay, so what we're going to do today is we're going to keep you waiting.
Yeah, let's build some suspense for once, Lloyd. Look, basically, the situation, listeners, is that this episode with Ellis was so good.
So good.
And Ellis had so much to say.
So much to say.
We don't really want to cut any of it.
We don't want to cut any of it.
So, in the interest of this not being as long as The Irishman, we've decided to do it in two parts so that it's not a two-hour-long podcast. So, come back tomorrow or just search Ellis James episode part two in Fit and Proper Podcast to get part two and find out what Ellis decided to do when he had the opportunity to take over his beloved Swans.
And it's very good.
Oh, it's tremendous.